Hey, listeners, welcome to the Natural Birth Talk. Today, Stephanie Kraft Sheely is sharing her high-risk but beautiful and natural birth story with us and talking all about how high-risk does not mean your natural birth plan has to go out the window. Here's a sneak peek, so stick around.
Luckily, I brought my doula with me to an appointment. It must have been around maybe 24, 25 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And she asked the OB that question and got a very different answer.
Hi, I'm Rachel Manns, owner of The Natural Birth Site and this podcast, The Natural Birth Talk. Here, you'll learn all about different natural aspects of birth, pregnancy, and postpartum. Remember, none of this information should take the place of a care provider and is not medical advice. Birth is not a medical emergency. Thanks for listening. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Natural Birth Talk. I'm Rachel, and today I am here with Stephanie Kraft Sheely, and she is going to talk about how even though she was very high risk in one of her pregnancies, she was still able to have a completely natural birth. But before we get started on that, I'm going to let her introduce herself.
Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Stephanie Kraft Sheely. I am an attorney who focuses on issues of childbirth and the law. I also direct the Right By You text line, which helps teenagers in Missouri access the full spectrum of reproductive health care. I'm the mother of 3-year-old twins, whose birth I'm here to discuss today.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on and to share this story because I think that a lot of people, as soon as they realize they're high risk, they think that a natural birth or a pain med free birth is completely out the window. And as a doula, I know that that is not true at all. And I just love that you're here to share that story and to be an example for everyone. So before we really get into the birth story, do you want to go ahead and tell us why you were considered high risk?
Yeah, the combination of having multiples, twins, and then also having a gestational diabetes diagnosis, and then later on in the pregnancy, the baby B being breech.
So you had several factors working against you. And in my personal opinion, 2 out of 3 of those things shouldn't really be considered high risk. The twins, and I mean, twins are a little riskier, but maybe I shouldn't have said that, but twins are a little riskier. They do take a little extra like focus, but in general, as long as you're healthy, then usually things are fine. And then baby B being breech is such a common thing. And if people do, you know, doctors will label you high risk, but if they have the proper training, something like that probably shouldn't label you as high risk, but high risk is a bit of a vague term. So for everyone out there, you know, just because your doctor says you're high risk may not mean you're actually high risk. And the same with like, you know, I always say low risk pregnancy. Sometimes I use that term, but low risk is vague too. And it often will depend on your care provider. That's a little bit of a digression. So you had several things that were making you be considered high risk. Let's talk about what your care looked like when they considered you high risk. What kind of actually backpedal? So I'm assuming you were seeing a maternal fetal medicine doctor.
Yeah, I mean, so there was kind of an evolution. So I started out at a birth center that's located inside of a hospital, but midwife run.
Uh-huh.
I was diagnosed with multiples and instantly risked out
of course,
that setting. And then they referred me to a physician that oversees their practice and was believed to them to be supportive of physiologic birth. And so I was referred to that physician. And then I actually was not referred to maternal fetal medicine until after the gestational diabetes diagnosis.
Okay.
So at that point, I was seeing an OB and a maternal fetal medicine physician.
Okay. So that's kind of what I suspected. I'm surprised they didn't have you seen an MFM for twins, but that's cool, I guess, that they weren't because the OB was confident. So at any point in time, did the MFM or the OB mention you needing a cesarean or needing to be induced or anything like that?
Well, yeah. So I ended up having to switch my care. So I don't know. I'd love to back up and talk about the gestational diabetes for just a second, because
sure.
I do think that's another relevant kind of hump that we had to get over when
okay.
it came to, you know, how our treating birth and pregnancy as a natural phenomenon. So one thing was I was diagnosed with gestational diabetes, and I learned at that time that the criteria are the same if you have twins or you have a singleton. Okay. And so that diagnosis criteria is the same. And I was asked to go on a diet that was essentially identical to what a singleton birthing person would be put on. And that was completely inadequate for my nutritional needs. I mean, mm-hmm. my husband is a pharmacist, a clinical pharmacist. And so we dug into the data on this. It was very clear that I needed upwards of like 3,000 calories a day. And mm-hmm. when we brought that to our maternal fetal medicine physician, he literally laughed and said, "Can you imagine how huge you would get?" And we had the study in our bag and we thought this is even a useless conversation. So we're not even going to try.
Wow.
And so I ended up managing it with diet, but had to, you know, take my blood sugar twice a day. And mm-hmm. it was extremely difficult to get the amount of calories that I needed mm-hmm. per day for the twins on that diet. Mm-hmm. And so that was a struggle in itself, especially because eating like a large quantity of lower calorie food is really hard when mm-hmm. you're carrying twins and your stomach is super compressed. So that was kind of, it was really challenging. And the other thing that I didn't know until I was in this position is that people who are pregnant with twin pregnancy itself, one of the biggest risks is that the babies will be born low birth weight.
Right.
And one of the biggest risks with gestational diabetes is that the baby will be too big. And so there's actually a theory out there that I'm very curious about, that a body that's pregnant with twins actually responds in a way that appears to be diabetic, but is actually appropriate and normal yeah. in order to be like this protective thing for the babies to help them maintain like a proper weight. Mm-hmm. It's just not been studied. We don't know. There's very little evidence out there about what actually is the proper way to diagnose and treat someone who has multiples and may or may not be diabetic.
That is really interesting, but it makes sense to me. And honestly, our testing for gestational diabetes in America is very arbitrary. It is not really supported by science in all reality. There are better ways of testing than the standard way of testing in America, which is one of the reasons why I am a big fan of just making sure you're eating healthfully and then not worrying too much unless you're not feeling good. So that is really interesting how there is this theory about how twins would make your body respond differently. That just completely makes sense to me. But like you said, since it hasn't been studied, most of these doctors aren't going to acknowledge it. Even if it had been studied, if it wasn't taught to them in their medical training, they're not going to acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. And so it's a hard balance to be able to figure out like what you need and what you don't need and how high risk are you really? And yeah, that's a whole thing. So you ended up switching care providers.
Well, so I was seeing, like I said, the MFM and the OB at the hospital that I was originally at, and my baby B was breech. And so at later appointments, who appeared to be baby B, I mean, you don't mm-hmm. always know,
right.
but who appeared to be baby B was breech. One of the babies was breech. We were getting into like 20 odd weeks, and I would go to my appointments with my OB. And I asked on multiple occasions how they would support me or whether they would support me in giving birth vaginally mm-hmm. to a breech baby if they didn't turn. I mean, sometimes they'll turn even after the first one comes right. out. You don't know.
Even with singleton babies, a lot of the times the babies don't turn until labor starts.
Right, exactly. And so, but I also knew that we needed to have this conversation well in advance.
Of course.
And was reassured multiple times that, you know, depending on the circumstances, because there are more and less safe criteria depending on the position and the position of the babies relative to one another and the position of the breech baby itself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, different factors, if they have, you know, if they're growing roughly the same rate and the same size, those types of things. So like assuming all went well with that, she was willing to support me giving birth vaginally is what she said. Okay. And then luckily I brought my doula with me to an appointment. It must have been around maybe 24, 25 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And she asked the OB that question and got a very different answer. My OB said, no, if at the time you go into labor or is around the time you should be delivering the either of the babies is breech, I will offer a C-section. But everyone in the room knew it wasn't an offer.
Right.
It was a requirement. So I left that appointment extremely upset.
Of course.
Because 24, 25 weeks is very late with twins. Since, you know, they come around like 35, 36 weeks on average. Mm-hmm. So I was feeling really upset because I knew I needed to switch or I was going to be railroaded into a C-section. And I knew switching this late was going to be difficult. And I spent weeks like calling everyone I could think of. And like I said, I was already in the birth community before I got pregnant.
Right.
And so I kind of had connections to reach out to. And I ran down all of those leads and I cried on the phone with people. And aww. I looked up all the guidelines from ACOG and everything. Uh-huh. And I just like built my case of why it was appropriate in my case to support a breech birth. And through like a really lucky series of events and advocacy from my doula, I ended up getting connected with a midwife working at a different hospital who then connected me with a physician there. Uh-huh. And then he told me that everyone at his group would be very relaxed about this and that my case was totally appropriate for an attempt at a breech delivery.
Because from the evidence, it is completely appropriate. Even ACOG, ACOG supports breech vaginal birth in the hands of a skilled provider, even in a singleton.
Exactly.
It supports it.
Yes. I had all the data on my side too, in terms of like babies growing at the same rate. Baby A is now very, like, it's very clear that he's going to come out first. Is head down, very low, like basically all the criteria I'm met. And so there was really no justification for denying it, except that, you know, if a provider is not trained or comfortable with breech delivery, they're not going to do it. Yeah. And I found that out too late almost.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Well, and there's a couple things I want to touch on from what you had said. So it is very common for baby B to be breech. It's very common because of just the way they fit in your body. It is very common. And so there are some care providers out there who wouldn't do a breech singleton, but would be very willing to do a breech baby B in twins. So that's something that I want the audience to kind of know the difference. You know, just because one care provider says they don't do breech in the case of twins, they might consider it. You still want to be careful and make sure you're asking all the questions like Stephanie did and the doula did, because that was really important and really ended up helping you. And then the idea of switching care providers is so crazy and stressful and even foreign to some people. The idea that you can just call up a different doctor's office and get in with them. Like, I think that we get it in our heads that whoever we chose is who we have to use, and that switching isn't an option, but it absolutely is an option. At least in St. Louis, we have lots of care providers who will take late transfers. Now, in your case with the twins, you know, that did add an extra hurdle to jump over, but switching care providers when you don't feel supported is absolutely a super valid option and is a really good idea. And I'm really proud of you for doing that because that's huge.
Thank you. It felt like there was no other way. I will say, and I agree with everything you've just said, but also in my case, like I called everyone under the sun. And in fact, the physician group that I originally, like I was told to call them, I called the group. I tried to make an appointment and they set me an appointment out beyond like when I would have been like 38, 39 weeks. I was like, this baby is probably coming before then. And so I had to go back and like make last ditch pleas to the same people I was talking to again and say, I called and they said they can't get me in. Please, is there something you can do? And through that self-advocacy, they were like, okay, I'm gonna have someone call you in 5 minutes. And so it's like, don't give up. Because even if they tell you it can't work, like, keep advocating for yourself, because I was able to figure it out and make it happen.
Yes. And I know exactly which group you're talking about and you haven't even told me, but I do know just from what you've said. And that does happen sometimes. Some groups, especially the groups that are more relaxed and more aware of patients' rights, they do tend to fill up and they do tend to book out. And it does tend to be harder to get into them because people want their care because it's good care. So it's kind of like this catch 22 of, you want to use the people who are providing good care, but it's really hard to get into the people who are providing good care
Yes.
And then one other thing I just wanted to point out was you had said you were kind of in the birth community already, and that was an advantage for you. And that is a huge advantage because I know all of these things because I'm in the birth community and you know all of these things, but people outside of the birth community don't know these things. And so a really, really wonderful way to kind of get your foot in the door is to go to doulamatch.net and look for local doulas in your area and reach out to them and ask them, even if you don't hire a doula, which you should, but even if you don't, reach out to them. And then also, if you have any chiropractors in your area who specialize in pregnancy, if you have any pelvic floor physical therapists in the area, things like that, that are very tailored to pregnant moms. If you are not in the birth community, you can get your foot in the door by reaching out to care providers who are familiar with the birth community.
100%. And I would add to that, that even though I already was in the birth community, my doula was the critical factor in me getting the care that I needed. Like, I was not going to figure this out on my own anyway, even knowing what I knew about my rights and about the help available. Like, she was so much more prepared to like figure this out. Yeah. And A, identified the problem with the first OB. And then B, ultimately was the one who got me the connection I needed to that other practice. So without those two things, like, I even needed that. So I would definitely co-sign everything you just said about reaching out to doulas.
Yes. We try to be very good at our jobs. So you found a care team that was supportive for you, and that went a little better, I assume. Hey everyone, Rachel Manns here, and today I have something I'm thrilled to share with you guys. Imagine having a treasure trove of informative, entertaining, and empowering video content about the journey to parenthood right at your fingertips. That's exactly what you get with Informed Pregnancy Plus. For less than 25 cents a day, that's a quarter, guys, you'll gain access to a vast subscription library filled with documentary films, web series, mind and body fitness programs, workshops, and courses covering fertility to parenting and everything in between. Designed for new and expectant parents, as well as pregnancy and birth professionals, Informed Pregnancy Plus is like having a trusted BFF and doctor in one, guiding you through every step of the path to and through parenthood. A few of just my favorite titles are obviously The Business of Being Born, Empowered Mama, Belly Dance for Birth, how fun is that? Ease into Sleep, The Afterbirth Plan, and The Core Connection, an extremely well-presented and informative workshop teaching you about your core and pelvic floor and how to keep them healthy. And here's the best part. For a limited time, you can gain full access absolutely free. Just visit informedpregnancy.tv to sign up. Sign up for Informed Pregnancy Plus right now. I'm not kidding, guys. It's really going to help you out. It's my prescription for your informed and empowered parenting journey, all from the comfort of your home. Visit informedpregnancy.tv. That's informedpregnancy.tv, and the link will be in the description below. Now back to the show.
It did. They were just a lot more relaxed. I mean, I still ended up getting monitored very regularly toward the end of my pregnancy, and that was a burdensome because I was tired and it was a distance from my house. But overall, yes, I felt like they didn't feel like it was an emergency what I was going through. Like, I felt like they thought it was normal, and that felt really a lot more comfortable.
Good. So leading up to the birth then, let's really get into your birth story.
Yeah.
Just start telling it wherever you want to start telling it.
Well, I mean, I went into labor spontaneously. At 34 and six, it was 34 and five is when it started. 34 and six is when I delivered.
So babies were born at 34 and six. That in and of itself would often make you considered high risk in the birth itself. Some care providers won't even entertain the idea of a vaginal birth if you're before 37 weeks. There are some out there who will just send you straight to a cesarean simply because you're not 37 weeks. So you're not 37 weeks. You're not even 36 weeks. You're 34 and five when your birthing time starts.
Yes. And with twins, there is some evidence that the babies mature a little bit faster. So some doctors are even kind of like you said with Breech, some doctors are a little more comfortable with a little earlier with twins.
Okay.
Like their lung development and stuff like that is a little bit farther along than singletons of the same gestational age.
Our bodies are so wise.
Yes. Yes, they really are. So my water broke actually and in the night and I woke up to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, called my doula and I didn't labor at home at all because there was blood and we just, mm-hmm. it was early. And so my doula just said, why don't we just go ahead and go straight to the hospital?
Yeah.
So met her at the hospital and, you know, started in the labor and delivery triage.
Mm-hmm.
And,
so uncomfortable.
Yes, yes it was. And, the challenge I met there actually was, even there with the plan that I had and the help that I had there, like instantly I was like almost shunted onto the routine. A resident walked in and said, all right, yep, your water's broken. Let's go ahead and start some Pitocin and get you induced. And my doula said, why? And he's, you know, didn't even have an answer, just kind of looked at her and she said, well, she's already in labor. So can we just see what happens there? And then a senior resident walked in and was like, oh, of course, like, absolutely, you're in labor, go for it. So it was just like needing to speak up.
Yes. And that's just the difference between a resident who's training still and a senior resident who is much more familiar with not just textbook birth or medical training, but actual birth.
Yes. Yeah.
So sometimes it's just a difference of asking for someone more experienced.
Yeah.
So they decided you didn't need Pitocin.
Yeah. And after just an unpleasant time of waiting and triage and whatever had to happen in there, I don't really remember everything. They kicked my doula and husband out briefly. I guess that's like a routine thing, maybe asking about safety questions or something.
Sometimes they will.
Necessary, but uncomfortable because, you know, and then there was a long period where I was alone and then ended up in my room. And from there, labor kind of took over.
Okay.
I had my doula's support and my husband's support. And I quickly started having contractions that I remember wanting to be someplace. Like I wanted to get in the shower. So I got in the shower with the warm water and it was
good.
Dark in there. And I was just kind of left alone doing my thing. And then after some period of time, a physician that I did not know came in and started trying to talk to me while I was having contractions in the shower and was trying to talk me into an epidural, which was not my plan.
Why?
Well, she told me.
I mean, I know why.
Yeah. She said that because my baby bee was Breech, that they were likely to use forceps or like Breech style forceps or something of this nature.
I know
that I would not tolerate the pain. And so I should get an epidural. And I honestly got so, and I had to keep asking her to wait until I was done having a contraction. And then
they should know better.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this was a bit of a blip, like in an otherwise pretty good experience, but it just, I mean, again, saved by the doula again, because that doctor walked away and I was terrified. Like no one had talked to me about forceps before at all. And when she said, you won't tolerate the pain, I was already in pain. I've not given birth before. So this was a whole new thing for me. And I was a little scared. My husband was a little scared. And I turned to my doula. I said, maybe I should just get the epidural. I didn't know about the forceps, you know, despite all my preparation. And my doula said, or we could just do the plan that you already had.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
And there are Breech style forceps. They're different than regular forceps. And they are used by people who aren't very well trained in birth, in Breech vaginal birth.
Okay.
So they are like fairly commonly used, but not by someone who truly understands Breech vaginal birth. So that's my little blip about that.
Yeah.
So the rest of your labor experience, how did all of that go? You know, were they trying to check your cervix regularly? Were they, did anybody else push an epidural? Were you coping really well? I like details.
Yeah. So I I think I coped okay. Again, I had like lots of counter pressure from my doula. I think she was massaging me the entire time. At one point she said, "You're going to be bruised by the end of this if we don't back off this and find something else to do." And so I was going along with that. Two nurses who had clearly been assigned based on my wishes because they were super into it. Uh-huh. And I believe the second one was actually currently training to be a midwife. And was like very supportive and excited about this birth. Mm-hmm. And no, in fact, I did have my nurse came back a couple of times and said, "Whenever you're ready, I'd like to check you. Just let me know." And then I just kept forgetting because I was otherwise focused and like really didn't push it.
Good for her.
In the meantime, I did get to a point where I said, "I can't do this anymore." And what I was looking for was kind of permission to get the epidural. But I also really, what I really wanted was like, give me something else. Like I'm at a point where I can't tolerate it anymore. And my doula said, "Well, have you thought about the nitrous?" And the nurse went and got that. Awesome. And I started using that. And honestly, half the time I wasn't doing a good job sealing it to my face. I think it might've been
it's really hard.
Yeah. But it was just like having something that I could control there was so helpful. I think it really got me over the hump. And then those times that I did use it well, I think it helped a little bit.
Yeah.
And my labor was not super long. So I think I got there around between midnight and 1 a.m. And ended up delivering around 10 a.m. So not a very long labor.
Yeah. Especially for a first time mom.
Yeah. Yeah. It went pretty quickly, but I know my cervix was checked in triage. Mm-hmm. And I will also say they wanted me on the continuous electronic monitors.
Of course they did.
And with twins, that means three straps and three monitors. And it was a lot. And they kept falling off because I was moving and like nobody gave me any trouble about it. They like made half-hearted attempts to kind of like move them back, but mostly they were just hanging loose and like no one was paying them any attention, which was so helpful and not interfering.
It's because you had good nurses, and that's huge. I love that the hospital purposely assigned you nurses that they knew would fit well with you, because that is not always the case. And sometimes it's not your care provider and it's not you and it's not the resident that derails the plan. Sometimes it's the nurse that derails the plan just because they simply don't know, or they're just not supportive for whatever reason. And so having a supportive nurse is huge. And moms always have the option to ask for a new nurse. But when hospitals are smart and they purposely assign nurses that they know will fit well with you, it just makes things so much better.
It was a huge thing for me. And so then at some point, I want to say 9 a.m.-ish, around, you know, somewhere between 9 and 10, my nurse finally was like, "Okay, I really would, like, I'm seeing some signs. I'd like to check your dilation." Mm-hmm. And at that point was like, "Okay, it's time to go." And after that, so I will say, they didn't really present it as even an option for me not to deliver in the operating room. So I did end up doing that.
Okay.
Knowing what I know today, I might advocate differently, but you know, being a first time birthing person, that was kind of the decision that I made. Uh-huh. And so there was a flurry of activity. Like all of a sudden people were pouring into the room. There was a question about, could my doula and my husband and my birth photographer come into the OR? Mm-hmm. And it was ultimately allowed because they were like, "Well, she doesn't have an epidural. So if there's a C-section, everyone's getting kicked out. So may as well bring everyone." So everybody came, which was awesome. It just felt so supported. And, you know, suddenly, just looking back on my birth pictures, I can appreciate how many people were in the room. There was so much going on. But we got into the room, into the OR, and the doctor wasn't there yet. And the midwife wasn't there yet. And they asked me to not push. And I was like, "I'll try. Like, my body's doing it."
I don't know why they think that's an option for people who don't have an epidural. It baffles me. Every time someone says that, I'm like, that's not a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't for me. So luckily I got transferred over. I was in the lithotomy position. I had my legs up in the leg supports, like all of that. It ended up working out. I pushed for a while with the first baby. And he was delivered head first, and he was caught by the midwife, the original midwife that had advocated for us. And I was extremely lucky that the physician I'd been seeing was actually on call, because this group operates by taking call. They don't they don't guarantee your physician that will be there, but he was. Right. And so the stars aligned for me. And so he came in, the midwife caught my first baby and they put him up on me. He had a really short umbilical cord and they let him be on me for just a second. And I just remember thinking, like, I thought I'd have this really warm, fuzzy reaction, but in labor, I just meant business. I was almost like, okay, he's got to go. We've got another one.
And just so the audience is aware, in case they don't know, lathotomy is laying on your back. You were laying on your back with your legs in the stirrup. Midwife caught your first baby. You pushed for a little while, but then baby A was birthed, put straight on your stomach for a few minutes, and then you were ready for the next one.
That's right. Yeah. There was also, because they were premature, there were two NICU teams standing ready in an adjacent room. And so it was pretty intense because my baby A was whisked away like pretty quickly into there. And like, they started doing some things on him and he needed some breathing help. So that was happening. My husband and Julia were still with me. And then within 13 minutes and really just a couple of actual pushes, baby B came. And so he started coming and my doctor reached up and felt what position he was coming in and said, "He's Frank Breech." So he took a step back and one of the other people in the room said, "Are you going to intervene in some way?" I can't remember what they asked. And he said, "Nope, everybody take your hands off her. She's going to push him out."
Good.
And, which was so empowering. And he stood there with his arms crossed and waited. And so I started pushing and he did some manipulation, and like I can't remember exactly what it was, but let the baby's feet hang for a second and then helped kind of guide him out when I pushed. And he came out. He needed even more help with breathing. And so they did take him straight away. And, you know, after that, it was delivering the placenta. I needed a few stitches and my husband went over to check on the babies while my doula stayed with me. And it was, you know, kind of a whirlwind after that once the babies were delivered. Yeah.
What an amazing story though. So just a couple of things I want to touch on. Just because you're having twins does not mean the cord of the first baby has to be clamped before the second one comes. And I know in your case, they needed breathing and there were extenuating circumstances, but I just like to let people know that you don't have to clamp the cord of the first baby for the second baby to be able to come. And I think people don't realize that, but they can stay attached as long as everything's going well.
Okay. Yeah. I think that wasn't even presented as an option and I hadn't considered that. My placentas were actually fused together.
Okay.
So they did not, I don't know what the options might've been under different circumstances, but certainly they both came after both babies. I don't know if that always happens.
I know that's normal.
Okay. Yeah. But they were like inextricably like fused together.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess if he hadn't needed to be taken away, maybe we could have delayed the clamping or the cutting, but it happened pretty quickly in my case.
Right. And I love your story in general. And so Breech is, your doctor was really wise to know not to touch a Breech baby because that is the rules. Like, you don't touch a Breech baby unless you see that there is a clear need. I just took the Breech Without Borders training like 2 weeks ago. So I was like really fresh on my mind. But yeah, you don't touch a Breech baby. And then really, they probably should have let you like flip and deliver in hands and knees. But it doesn't matter because you had a really awesome birth story and you got so much more than so many moms with twins would get. And you were twins, you had a Breech baby, you were 34 weeks, and you had, quote, gestational diabetes. I put that in quotes because of what we talked about earlier. But you had all of these things that so many people would have said, cesarean, induction, Pitocin, blah, 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 epidural. You know, you had one nurse trying to talk you in, or one doctor trying to talk you into an epidural, and you were able to just stand your ground and say no. And your doula was able to be there and help. Doulas are amazing. Not to toot my own horn, but they can make such a difference. And just by knowing your rights and having the evidence and having the right support and finding the right care team, you were able to take your very high risk pregnancy and turn it into a really awesome birth.
Thank you. I love the way you put that. I will keep that with me.
Is there anything else you want to add? It's just, I feel like babies are here and everything was great. You know, that's a great way to end on, but
yeah, I mean, I don't really think so. I think, I mean, obviously, and then you don't even necessarily have to include this, but I think that, you know, then there was the whole other matter of the NICU stay,
yes,
and how that felt and how that affected recovering from birth. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the birth itself was wonderful and like kind of a triumph is what I would
say. Yeah, absolutely. That is such a good word for it, because when you are supported in birth, even if it ends up not being a natural birth, but you were supported in the choices that you made the whole time, it is a triumph. It is empowering and it is amazing. And just feeling supported and listened to and respected is what really makes all the difference. And you found a care team that did that for you.
Yes, I did.
And the NICU thing, we won't get into that in this episode, but I definitely need to have a podcast on that, because even when you have a natural birth, sometimes babies do end up in the NICU, and that's just a whole nother thing to talk about. But we don't have enough time today. I do. I just love your story and I really appreciate you being here and sharing it. I really hope that inspires a lot of the audience to know that just because they're high risk doesn't mean they have to throw their birth plan out the window. And if you have an unsupportive care provider, then you go find a different one. Or you get a doula who's going to help you advocate for yourself, even if your care provider isn't wanting you to do those things. So that's huge too. Because unfortunately, in some areas, we don't have options to switch, or we don't have supportive care providers, but that's there when just having that doula can make a big difference still. So, okay, that's enough of my rambling. Again, thank you for being on and sharing. And then audience, thank you so much for listening. If you guys have any questions at all, reach out to me at contact@thenaturalbirthsite.com. And I'm happy to answer any questions and help guide you in any way. I will put doulamatch.net in the link below. And then again, like I said, if you guys have any other questions, you can email me. But thanks for listening, and I will talk to you in the next episode. Hi, Rachel Manns again. If you want to learn more, please subscribe to this podcast and head over to my site, thenaturalbirthsite.com, to check out my blog, shop, email list, and YouTube channel. Thanks. Hi, Rachel Manns again. If you want to learn more, please subscribe to and rate this podcast and head over to thenaturalbirthsite.com to check out our online natural birth education course, birth story blog, YouTube channel, and more.